It is a joy to be with you today. Appreciate so much all of you who are joining us in worship to God. And we've had the opportunity, of course, to partake of the Lord's Supper and to sing and to pray and now to study the holy and divine Word of God. The story of Jonathan in the Old Testament is a tremendous story of a very godly and courageous man in some difficulty, in great difficulty, actually. And a lot of the times in the conflict, and we're going to talk about the conflict between King Saul and David, Jonathan kind of gets lost to some degree. Maybe we remember a little bit about Jonathan, that he was a dear friend, very close, best friend to David. But there's a lot more about Jonathan in this dynamic, in these relationships, that would be very valuable for us, I think. And so this morning we're going to be talking about Jonathan, the man who would not be king. And you think about that, Jonathan really, if all of this hadn't happened with King Saul, if he had been the man that he should have been, would have been the next in line. He was the son of the man who was serving as king. And yet we know that is not what takes place. And in order to appreciate what actually does take place, we need to back up here to 1 Samuel chapter 8 and think about what led to this point. So I want to look at 1 Samuel chapter 8 and verse 1. Of course, we begin with Samuel. Now, to give some background, and Samuel talks about this, when you look at basically the kind of government that Israel had prior to having kings, prior to having King Saul, you have God as the true king reigning over them. You had prophets and you had judges. And so that was how things worked. They didn't always accept the teachings of God as they should have. You can read the book of Judges and know that very well. But something happens here. Israel, as they look at the sons of Samuel, that great prophet Samuel, as they look at his sons, they rightly observe that they are ungodly men. They're not fit to be judges. And yet they had been appointed to be so. Look there in chapter 8 and verse 1, and it came about when Samuel was old that he appointed his sons judges over Israel. If you come down now with me to verse 5, though, they say to him, "Behold, you have grown old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now appoint a king for us to judge us like all the nations." They want to be like the people that were around them. They want to be like the nations that were around them. Samuel obviously feels hurt. And God says, "Samuel, don't take this so personally," and I'm paraphrasing. This is really a rejection of me. It's not just you that they are rejecting. This is a rejection of me. And so when you look at 1 Samuel chapter 8 in verse 7, Samuel prays to the Lord about this. And the Lord said to Samuel, "Listen to the voice of the people in regard to all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them. Like all the deeds which they have done since the day when I brought them up out of Egypt, even to this day, in that they have forsaken me and served other gods, so they are doing to you also. Now then, listen to their voice, however. You shall solemnly warn them and tell them of the procedure of the king who will reign over them." So you go ahead and you're going to anoint a king. I'm going to anoint a king. But you need to be very clear to them what's going to happen. What the consequences of this decision are going to be. And so when you read verses 10 through 17, basically, that's exactly what he does. So after 350 years of having judges, they say, "We want to be like everybody else." And the thing is, if Samuel's sons were not fit to serve, somebody else could have been examined. But they want to be like everybody else. They don't want really a theocracy. They want a monarchy. They just want to fit in with everybody around them. And when you think about Israel, we see this kind of disobedience and this cycle of disobedience over and over and over again, don't we? They will do good for a while, and then they'll depart from God, and there will be consequences. And when you look at the judges, it's about a 40-year span of them being faithful, and then we have a big problem. And having a king is certainly not going to cure that problem. It's not going to make that better. Were there some good kings? Yes. There were a lot of very unfaithful kings. And if you look at what Samuel warns the people, I want you to notice a few of the things that he says. He says there in 1 Samuel chapter 8 that if you have a king, there's some things that means. It means that your labor will be forced for the benefit of the king. He goes on to say they will force you to fashion their military power for their own interest. They will draft your sons into their military. They will take your daughters for themselves to be cooks and servants. They'll take your land. And they're going to tax you. I mean, that's what's going to happen. If you have a king, that's how that occurs. And if you look at verse 19, nevertheless, the people refused to listen to the voice of Samuel. And they said, no, but there shall be a king over us. They were tired of the judges and all of that. That we may also be like all the nations, that our king may judge us and go out before us. And listen, and fight our battle. It's almost as if they have in their mind, if we could just have a king, wouldn't that be wonderful? We could sit back and support that king, and that's going to solve all these problems. In verse 21, after Samuel had heard all the words of the people, he repeated them in the Lord's hearing, and the Lord said to Samuel, listen to the voice, to their voice, and appoint them a king. So Samuel said to the men of Israel, go every man to his city. And so the first king that we're going to have is going to be King Saul. And under King Saul, all of these realities are going to come to bear. And there would be other kings that certainly would be the case as well. And so when we think about this story, as we talk about Jonathan, that's the background that leads into King Saul. And what I want to do this morning is we're just going to look at different relationships. So we're going to look at the beginning at King Saul and his son Jonathan. Eventually we'll get to King Saul and David, and we'll talk about some others. But really there's some insights, I think, in the narrative of Scripture that sometimes we don't notice, that Jonathan, if anybody knew Saul, if anybody knew his father and the character of his father, it was him. And as much as he loved his father and wanted more than anything to respect his father, he knew his character. So let's notice some passages and what we find out in their relationship, and this is an important lesson for us, and that is that character really does matter. And when you think about King Saul's problem, King Saul's problem was not his appearance. It wasn't his appearance. He looked like a man that should be king. I mean, if you saw Saul walk in the room, he's the tall, dark, handsome man. He's taller than the rest. Apparently, he was very handsome and striking when you saw him. And so I'm sure as he would be the first king, people would think that's him. Well, let's look at 1 Samuel rather, chapter 9 and verse 2. He speaks of him being appointed. He was the son of a Benjamite, a mighty man of valor. It seems like he's coming from the right family. He had a son whose name was Saul, a choice and handsome man. And there was not a more handsome person than he among the sons of Israel. From his shoulders, he was taller than any of the people. We would say he was head and shoulders above the rest. And so the outside looks really good. That's not the problem. Come now to chapter 10 and notice verses 16 and 21. And this is very early on. And perhaps this might have indicated something. So he knows that being king is in his future. And there's this little story where his family had lost some donkeys, and he talks to the prophet. And yeah, he tells him about the donkeys, but the main point is not the donkeys. The point is he's going to be king. And when he's asked about that conversation, he doesn't say, listen, I'm going to have the opportunity to lead the people of God. That's not what he says. He says, oh, I found out about those donkeys. And the text indicates he keeps very secretive what's in front of him. So in chapter 10 and in verse 16, so Saul says to his uncle, he told us plainly that the donkeys had been found, but he did not tell him about the matter of the kingdom which Samuel had mentioned. Then look at verse 21. Then he brought the tribe of Benjamin near by its families. And the Matrite family was taken, and Saul the son of Kish was taken. But then they looked for him, and he could not be found. Now someone, we might say, maybe he's just timid or concerned or doesn't know what all of this really means. But nonetheless, I think there's something there. As we progress in thinking about this, it's important to understand what Saul's problem was. It was not the outside, it was the inside. And if there's ever any circumstance when the inside gets exposed, it's in conflict in leadership. And that's what's going to take place here. So that tells us something about Saul, but I want to talk about the difference in Saul and Jonathan as far as leadership quality. Before we even get to David, I want to think with you about Saul and Jonathan. Well, you know, when you look at Jonathan's qualities, it does make you wonder, you know, if he had been king, I think he would have been a really good king. He was very much better, you might say, in contrast and comparison to his father's character. Jonathan had integrity. Jonathan was a humble man. Jonathan had character. He cared about truth and right and trusting God and serving God and being faithful to God. And often we think of 1 Samuel 15 with the Amalekites, but when we find out that God is very displeased with King Saul, and that's true, but I want to back up to chapter 13. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 13. This is dealing with the Philistines in Gilgal. And I think there's some interesting things here. Back in chapter 9 and verse 16, God had promised he would deliver his people if they would trust him and be faithful. And it says something to us about Jonathan that in this scenario with the Philistines, of course, Saul would have those with him, but Jonathan at a young age was over 1,000 men. And what comes to bear on this is, and you see that in verses 1 and 2, look at verse 3, Jonathan smote the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba, and the Philistines heard of it, and then Saul blew the temple throughout the land, saying, let the Hebrews hear. And all Israel heard the news that Saul had smitten the garrison of the Philistines, and also that Israel had become odious to the Philistines, and the people were then summoned to Saul at Gilgal. So here we are at Gilgal. Jonathan is actually the one that gets everything really moving. And here you have Jonathan, and the Philistines realize what happened, and now they're mad about it, and they bring the forces. And so I want you to really get the scene here. So the Philistines, verse 5, assembled to fight with Israel. Now listen to these numbers. 30,000 chariots. Imagine that in your mind. There's 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen and people like the sand which is on the seashore in abundance. And they came up and they camped at Michmash east of Bethaven. And Israel scared. It says the people felt hard pressed. They hid themselves in caves and thickets and cliffs and cellars and in pits. That's when you have to have leadership. That's when King Saul has to step up and fight valiantly and lead them and inspire them and encourage them. And that's not the kind of man that he was. Now, in the background of this, Samuel had said, listen, wait for me 7 days and I will come and I will offer sacrifices and then you can go to battle and you will be victorious. Now, that's the instruction from the Lord. Wait for me. Not you go make the sacrifice. And by the way, when kings tried to get in the role of making sacrifices in the Old Testament, that's not what God wanted. And so he says, wait for me. Well, here we see King Saul. And whenever he would get in a pinch, he would stop trusting in God and start trusting in himself. And so he thinks, what am I going to do? He also has a problem of accepting responsibility for his decisions. It's always somebody else's fault. It's the people's fault, or it's their fault, or it's the situation, or why didn't you get here faster, Sam? And so look here in chapter 13. With that being said, verse 8, now he waited 7 days according to the appointed time set by Samuel. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattering from him. So Saul said, bring to me the burnt offering and the peace offering. And he offered the burnt offering. And as soon as he finished offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. And Saul went out. I love how Saul always does this. He does this in chapter 15 too. He knows he's not done the right thing. He goes out to meet him and to greet him, acting like everything's okay. But Samuel said, what have you done? And Saul said, well, because I saw that the people were scattering from me and that you did not come within the appointed days and that the Philistines were assembling at Michmash. Do you see what he does? Well, you didn't get here on time. And they were scattering from me, so I really didn't have any choice. Therefore, I said, now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal, and I have not asked for the favor of the Lord. Now, I love this. So I forced myself. So he says, you weren't here on time. The people were scattering. So I thought, well, I need to honor God before they get here. You never honor God by dishonoring God. A lot of people try to do that. Well, you know, at least we're worshiping. Well, if I'm worshiping in a way that is not authorized, I'm trying to honor God by dishonoring him. And that doesn't work. I honor God by doing what he's asked me to do. And so he presents this scene as if he's, you know, looking upward and glorifying God. And listen, Samuel cuts through all the excuses. Listen to what he says. It says, Samuel said to Saul, verse 13, you have acted foolishly. You have acted foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever, but now your kingdom shall not endure. The Lord has sought out for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has appointed him as ruler over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you. And you see there's a problem. The Lord's looking for a different kind of leader, and that leader will be David. A man after God's own heart. Saul doesn't have the heart of God. Now, as we keep moving through this, we see the handwriting on the wall, you might say. We see Saul not taking personal responsibility, blaming everybody else, not obeying the commandment of the Lord. Come to 1 Samuel chapter 15. Come to 1 Samuel chapter 15. It happens again. Remember the Amalekites? He makes it very clear. I want you to utterly destroy everything. And there was a reason for that. We won't go into. There's a history in that. They were opposed to God, opposed to his people. They were a vicious, bloodthirsty, violent people. And so he says, this is what I want you to do. Notice 1 Samuel chapter 15, if you look at verses 1 through 3, says, I made you king. This is what's supposed to happen. And they fulfill part of the commandment, but that's not true obedience. You have the Amalekites, you have Agag. So Saul defeats them. They capture Agag and the Amalekites alive. They utterly destroy, verse 8, all the people and the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep for themselves. Again, very selfish. Verse 10, then the word of the Lord came to Samuel saying, I regret, here we go, verse 11, he says it again. I regret that I made Saul king, for he has turned back from following me and has not carried out my commandments. And Samuel was distressed and cried out to the Lord all night. He loved this man. But he knew that he was disobedient to God. And when he comes up, here he comes again, King Saul, looking at how I've obeyed God. Look at how I've obeyed God. And he comes back to him and he says, okay, but I hear some sheep. And I hear some livestock that say that you haven't obeyed God. And if you read all of 1 Samuel chapter 15, he tells him what's going to happen. He tells him, you rushed on this for your own selfishness instead of obeying God. Look at verse 22. Has the Lord as much delight in burnt offering and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of divination, and insubordination is as iniquity and idolatry. And because you, he tells them, because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king. And Saul finally comes around and says, the reason I did this is I feared the people. Now, I want you to go back to early on in the story of King Saul. This is a recurring theme. You know, we can fear the people more than God. We can do that as those who claim to be Christians. We can do that when we're making moral decisions. Elders can do that in a local congregation. Gospel preachers can do that by compromising. As we raise our children, we can do that. But that was King Saul's problem. And he goes on, and you see Samuel's the one. The old man Samuel pulls out that heavy sword and he hacks Agag to pieces. I want you to go back to chapter 14 and see something about Jonathan. In between, this is very interesting to me, in between chapter 13 where you see King Saul compromising and chapter 15 where you see him compromising because he feared the people and he feared the circumstances and he was afraid of the situation, we have Jonathan. And if you look at chapter 14, I want to look at verses 6 and 7 with you. In chapter 14, in verse 6, Jonathan says to his armor bearer, we're going to go attack the Philistines after Gilgal. And the area they're going up to get them, they're going to catch them off guard because they don't think anybody can get up to them. It's very difficult. Verse 6 of chapter 14, then Jonathan said to the young man who was carrying his armor, come and let us cross over to the garrison of the uncircumcised. Now, I love this statement. Look at the end of verse 6. Here's what Jonathan says. Look at the difference in him and his father. Perhaps, verse 6, 1 Samuel 14, 6, perhaps the Lord will work for us. For the Lord is not restrained to save by many or by few. King Saul fears the people, fears the Philistines, fears the circumstances. Jonathan was different than his father. He was different than his father. And so in verse 7, his armor bearer said, wherever you desire, whatever you desire, I'm there with you. Jonathan was courageous. This, and I'll try to make this pretty quickly, but if you look at chapter 14, I do want you to look at verses 29 and 30. So while he's doing this, King Saul makes this foolish oath with his men who are fighting for him, and he says, listen, here's what we're going to do. Nobody eats until the enemies are vanquished. Oh, that's great. Now we've got a bunch of soldiers who are going to be weakened because they haven't eaten. His son doesn't know about this, so Jonathan eats and even tells it. He comes back and they say, oh no, your father said anybody that eats is going to die. He said, well, you know, I ate some honey and I did that and that brought life to me, and if only all the soldiers had eaten instead of this foolish kind of oath, we would have been in good shape. Saul's going to ask that his own son die because of this silly oath that he's made. And the people stand up and say, no, no, Jonathan's a hero. Jonathan has been brave and Jonathan has been courageous. Why would you do that? Do you see just the, I'm just trying to paint the picture for you of King Saul, that he's selfish and he's rebellious and he's fearful and he's impetuous and he's reckless, and he's foolish. And Jonathan had to deal with that. You see that there in 1 Samuel 14. He certainly knew it. Jonathan, rather than being fearful, indecisive, reactionary, disobedient, reckless, proud, and heavy-handed, was the opposite. He was humble. He took courage. He was compassionate. He exhibited the trust of the Lord. Now, this is even going to come more into our view when David comes on the scene. So you already have the difference between Jonathan and his own father, King Saul. So the contrast we see here is revealing Saul. The differences between Saul's lack of character and Jonathan's integrity become crystallized when David comes on the scene. So let's look at this relationship that develops with Jonathan and David. And here the emphasis is having a heart after God. Saul and Jonathan teach us that character matters. But now it's important to have a heart after God. We mentioned 1 Samuel chapter 15 where we see Saul continue to demonstrate this destructive behavior. But there's something else I want you to see after chapter 15. Go to chapter 16. So here we begin to see David. And it tells us something about how God looks at leadership and how he looks at salvation. King Saul, remember I told you the outside looked great, but the inside was the problem. Now David was a handsome young man, but he was a young man. You would not have seen David in his younger years, I think, go, oh, well, that's going to be this historical king for Israel. In fact, when he was to be anointed, he wasn't the first one on the list in anyone's mind except God's. So look there at chapter 16 and verse 6. When they entered, he looked at Eliab and thought, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For God sees not as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Think about that for a minute. So Saul, his problem is the heart. David is a man after God's own heart. You know who else had a heart like God's? Jonathan. And when we read about this relationship with Jonathan and David, what is it that caused them to be so close? Character. Integrity. They both had a heart for God. Saul's house is rejected. His throne is rejected. He will have been rejected. So look at chapter 16 with me now. And I want you to see the contrast again in the narrative. Verse 12. So he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy with beautiful eyes and a handsome appearance. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. Then Samuel took the horn of the oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon David from that day forward. And Samuel arose and went to Ramah. Look at verse 14. So the Spirit of the Lord comes on David. But in verse 14, now the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul. That tells you all you need to know. And then we all know, we won't go into the detail, David and Goliath. And so David moves from being the musician who would comfort King Saul because this evil spirit was tormenting him and the Spirit of the Lord had departed from him. He would come in and try to be helpful to him. But now what we see is he's moving from being a musician and being a shepherd boy to now being a warrior. And he gains the respect of the people. And the people would sing out. And I don't know that they were trying to insult King Saul, but he has, we would say he has some serious narcissistic tendencies. And so He's very self-consumed, and they're singing, Saul's killed his thousands and David his 10,000s. And he's insulted by that rather than rejoicing that the power of the Lord had worked in both of their lives. And Goliath is conquered and killed, and we know that story very well. And after that, we get to chapter 18. And I want you to come to chapter 18 with me. Chapter 18. That's where we really see, after that event, Jonathan and David become very close. So we've moved from Saul and Jonathan. We're looking at David and Jonathan. Look at chapter 18. It's a beautiful section. Now it came about when he had finished speaking to Saul. Now listen to what it says. That the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself. Saul took him that day and did not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan, now this will be important, then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself, and Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, including his sword and his bow and his belt, and it says David prospered. Now, this tells you a lot about this man. If anybody might have been tempted to have been jealous of David, it would have been Jonathan. I mean, was it really Jonathan's fault that his father was so reckless and selfish and disobedient to God? I mean, you could just go down that list, but he never does. And the text says that his soul and David's soul were knit together. This is just the most godly relationship you can imagine. And I believe the reason their souls were knit together, and the reason the text says that, is very clear, and that is, again, because David had a heart after God, and Jonathan had a heart after God, and there was a spiritual fellowship that they enjoyed. What a contrast. Saul is just filled with envy and jealousy. And here is his son. Verse 3 says, they made a covenant with one another. By the way, this covenant will transcend even death. And Jonathan, see the scene. You think about armor. Think about royalty. He takes that off. And he hands it to David. Are we consumed with selfishness and jealousy and envy? Should we not be more like Jonathan? The name Jonathan means gift from the Lord. So when you look at chapter 18, verses 2 through 9, this is what happens to David. He actually ends up marrying Michal, which is King Saul's daughter. So get this picture. Talk about this family reunion. So you have Saul is David's father-in-law. Jonathan is his brother-in-law. And he's enjoying this prosperity, and the people, he's highly respected if you look at chapter 18, verses 2 through 9. So the people respect him. Now I want you to think about this. What King Saul has inside him is just poisonous, toxic jealousy and evil. And everyone, and he tries to go and poison everybody he can. He tries to get, he wants Michal to be his wife. He wants her to ensnare him so he can kill him. He's going to try to get his family to do the same thing. And yet everybody that he tries to get to do those kinds of things won't do it because they love David, which only kind of spirals him more. You see that in 18:20 through 19:3. But Jonathan is a faithful friend. Look at chapter 19, if you would. Jonathan comes to him and he warns him. And he says, listen, I'm going to tell you, you need to hide. Does my father want you dead? In verse 4, then Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, do not let the king sin against his servant David, since he has not sinned against you, and since his deeds have been very beneficial to you. That seems sensible. David didn't want anything but good things for Saul. For he took his life in his hand and struck the Philistine, and the Lord brought about a great deliverance for all Israel, and you saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood by putting David to death without a cause? And Saul listened to the voice of Jonathan, and Saul vowed, as the Lord lives, he should not be put to death. Okay, that sounds great. So Jonathan tells him, listen, it's going to be okay. And then there's another war, or more war, and David goes out and he fights the Philistines and he defeats them. And now here we go again. And he's trying to comfort Saul, and Saul takes the spear and tries to kill David. And then he sends all kinds of messengers. He's trying to manipulate whoever he could possibly manipulate. He tries to kill him repeatedly. Chapter 19, verses 4 through 6. Chapter 19, verses 11 through 17. And Jonathan comes to him again in chapter 20. I want you to notice chapter 20 with me. He comes to him. Well, let me back up just for a minute. So after chapter 19, and you have all of this going on with him trying to manipulate the situation, Jonathan comes back in verse 4 of John 20. After they have a discussion, Jonathan says to David, whatever you say, I will do for you. And so David and him come up with this plan that is a code that has to do with a young man and arrows, a bow and arrow and all that, to know, does he want to still kill me? He also, David points out to him, there was going to be a big feast, kind of a royal dinner. And he said, I'm not going to be there. And if he's okay with me not being there, you'll know he's not planning on killing me. But if he gets really angry because I'm not there, then we'll know. Because he wants me there so he can kill me. And Saul becomes very, very angry. In fact, look at verses 30 and 31 of chapter 20. Then Saul's anger burned against Jonathan, his own son. And he said, you son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you are choosing the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established. Therefore now send and bring him to me, for he must surely die. But Jonathan answered Saul his father and said to him, why should he be put to death? What has he done? Then Saul hurls his spear to strike him down. So he's tried to kill David. Now he's willing to kill his own son. He wants to kill Jonathan. There's goodness in Jonathan, the goodness that wasn't there in Saul. Why did Saul hate him so much? When you look at 1 Samuel chapters 18 through 20, he would spend the rest of his life trying to kill David out of pure jealousy. David spent that time fleeing, hiding, and surviving. On numerous occasions, he could have easily have killed King Saul. Numerous occasions. But he said, no, he's still king. He let the Lord take care of that. I want you to look at something that I think is very encouraging. And during all this distress, look at chapter 23, and I want you to look at verses 16 and 17. So 1 Samuel 23, 16 and 17. So stay with the picture so far. We've got this close relationship with David and Jonathan. Jonathan's willing to risk his own life to defend David because he knows it's the right thing to do. He knows the kind of man his father is. We see his father in this spiritual condition, wretched condition. But in 1 Samuel 23, during all that, Jonathan would find ways to meet his friend and encourage him. And there's a lesson for us here. When people are in great distress, they need the encouragement of God, and that comes through his people. Look at verse 16. And Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David at Resh. And listen to what the scripture says. It says he encouraged him in God. I've wondered, what did he say? Well, he encouraged him in God in that he pointed toward, you're going to be king. Look at the next verse. Thus he said to him, do not be afraid, because the hand of Saul, my father, will not find you, and you will be king over Israel, and I will be next to you. And Saul, my father, knows that. Think about that message. He says, I know it's bad. I know you're having to survive. I know you're on the run. I know it's hard right now. I know your heart is hurting and you feel alone, but you're not alone. My father himself knows, I will not abandon you. You will be king. God's will be done. In our moments of trial and difficulty, we need to remember God's will certainly will be done. And we need to encourage one another in God. In that way, he was a mighty warrior, Jonathan was, a noble prince, a faithful friend, and a loyal servant of God. And he had accepted and embraced his role as a servant. So, there's something very sad. Come to chapter 31 now. Come to 1 Samuel 31. And this, we're going to bring everything in now. Okay, so we've got the situation with Saul. We've got the situation with Saul and Jonathan. We've got Jonathan and David. But there's another name that will pull it all together this morning. And his name is Mephibosheth. So, chapter 23, verse 17, chapter 20 as well. David and Jonathan had a covenant. Not only to care for one another, not only to encourage one another, but to do God's will and to be concerned for one another's family. Now, here's the thing. When you have a transition, we talk about transition of power. This would not have been a peaceful transition of power at all. Usually, if you have another family line, they're all going to die. But Jonathan and King Saul are in battle. And they have this covenant. Look at 1 Samuel 31, verse 2. The Philistines overtook Saul and his sons. And the Philistines killed Jonathan. If you know the story, you're not surprised. But if you don't know the story, there's one question you ask. Why? Why Jonathan? Jonathan had been faithful to God, and yet the Philistines overcome them. Verse 8, it came about the next day when the Philistines came to strip the slain that they found Saul and his three sons. Verse 9, they cut off his head. They stripped off his weapons. They sent them throughout the land of the Philistines. The bodies were taken. And some people came in and removed them and burned the bodies so they would not be there among these pagans. So, King Saul has an armor bearer. Apparently he was wounded in some way, and he asks him to kill him, basically commit suicide. The news is brought to David. Remember, their souls were knit together. The news is brought to him. Verse 10, 2 Samuel 1. So I stood beside him and killed him, because I knew that he could not live after he had fallen. Verse 11, then David took hold of his clothes and tore them, and so also did all the men who were with him. Look at verse 12. They mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and his son Jonathan and for the people of the Lord and of the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. Then a tribute is given. I want you to notice it with me, just a few verses from it. David chanted a lament over Saul and Jonathan. Look at verse 22. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan did not turn back. Verse 23. Saul and Jonathan, beloved and pleasant in their life, and in their death they were not parted. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. Look at verse 25. How have the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle? Jonathan is slain on your high places. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. You have been very pleasant to me. He speaks of his loyalty and love. Verse 27, how have the mighty fallen and the weapons of war perished? And you think, Bruce, so that's the ending of your sermon today after all of that. No. Here's what I want you to see. So, remember that covenant. During this battle, Jonathan has a son. His name is Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth is 5 years old. A woman, the equivalent of a nanny, is caring for him and trying to get him out of there so he survives. Jonathan dies. In the process of taking him out, in 2 Samuel chapter 4 and chapter 9 beautifully presents this. Here's what we learn. On the way out, apparently she accidentally drops him. He breaks both legs. He ends up being crippled. David, in 2 Samuel chapter 9, finds out that Jonathan has a son. And he remembers their covenant with one another. And Mephibosheth, who would have been impoverished and lame and crippled, David finds this out. He's told this about Mephibosheth, and he says, go find him, get him. I've got to have this faithful love for my friend. And they bring Mephibosheth. And I want you to know what he does for Mephibosheth. David takes him and takes initiative and seeks him and finds him. And he welcomes Mephibosheth, who was crippled because he's the son of Jonathan, into his palace. Even though his grandfather had been his mortal enemy, even though Mephibosheth did not have the resources to pay him back for any of this, he brings him into the royal house. Now stay with me. After all of this, with Saul being the way he had been, and the loss of Jonathan, and now he's king, but he remembers, even after Jonathan's death, I told you this faithful love and covenant that they had and the friendship they had, because they both had a heart after God, transcended death. They bring Mephibosheth, he sets him in the royal house, he sets him at the table, he grants him an inheritance that he really didn't deserve, he gives him land that Saul had had, and Mephibosheth became a lifelong faithful servant of God. Now that's the story of Jonathan, and that's the story of Jonathan and David and Saul. But as we end the sermon this morning, here's what I want you to take home with you. We can learn about loyalty and friendship and faithfulness and all of that. But I want you just for a moment to think about how that is the perfect illustration of God's love for us. That we are like Mephibosheth. That we have been crippled by sin. That we did not have any resources to bring. It wasn't that we could repay the Lord or earn anything. And what has He done for us? What has God done for us? We love Him because He first loved us. He took the initiative. He sought us out. He has welcomed us to His spiritual palace. We were His enemies. He has brought us to the house of God. He sets us at His table. He grants us the hope of an inheritance if we will be but faithful. And let me tell you just a little bit rest of this story. Mephibosheth had a son named Micah. And Micah had sons. And those sons, Saul was the enemy of David. And then we have Jonathan, who was his dear friend. We have Mephibosheth, who was shown mercy, who was crippled. But then Micah would come, his son, and there would be descendants. And 1 Chronicles 8 tells us this, that those men became great, great warriors for the people of God. So what seems like a sad ending, Jonathan's descendants have his heart in serving King David. So the question for us, when you think about, I want you to think about this. The first recorded words that I can find of Jonathan, he says, "Nothing shall restrain the Lord from working for us, whether by many or few." And his last words are, "Do not fear, you shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you." He may not have physically been next to him, but in his heart, he was next to him. So what lesson can we learn? We can learn that our God has brought us and seated us at the table of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And we can be his faithful warriors. We can be loyal friends. And we can be his soldiers. You've listened very well. I appreciate your good attention. I know we've spent a great deal of time just telling the story. But I don't think I could say anything that would add to what the text of Scripture says beyond that. Thank you for your good attention. God is calling you. He's calling you to come to the table of salvation. And you may say, what do I bring? Bring your heart, bring your faith, and surrender yourself to Him. If you're not a Christian, we invite you to come. As together we stand and we sing.